Thank you very much, the chairman, distinguished colleagues. What I want to talk about today is how we can improve the management of our heart failure patients with atrial fibrillation. And I will go over current available evidence from RCTs a bit faster, show meta-analysis and some real-world data that catheter ablation provides a prognostic mortality benefit in these patients. And I will present some data from our own lab, how we may can stratify in the future who gets the biggest bang of AF ablation. And we couldn't have had a smoother transition into that topic than having heard about the outcome of patients in the Cabana HF in-treatment subpopulation a couple of minutes ago. And as experts, you are probably fully aware of the CASTLE AF results reporting about mortality benefit 2 with all its ups and downs. And if we trust the webpage, I built this figure with even the penguins by now in Alaska anew. And there have been more RCTs in the past, like the Camara MRI, the CAMTAF, the AATAC. But due to time issues, and we also heard about yesterday and in the debate from Professor Cook already, I'd like to fast forward here, go over more comprehensive data, and check on the latest and largest available meta-analysis coming out or came out last August. Which provides evidence from 11 well-known RCTs, which were put together and a stratified pooled analysis of two subsets of therapy were performed. Subset A investigating results from Britain versus rate control, and B comparing data from catheter ablation versus medical therapy. And overall, there were 3,600 patients available for proof of all-cause mortality, rehospitalization, and stroke as the primary outcome, and improvement of LVEF symptoms, quality of life, rates of recurrence, and also adverse events in the secondary outcome. And comparing medical rhythm versus rate control, no mortality benefit or influence on stroke rate could be found, but rehospitalization rates were increased by 25%. Whereas treatment by catheter ablation showed a significant mortality benefit by 49%, rehospitalization by 56%, and a stroke rate, although not difficult, by 40%, respectively. And this is a way larger treatment effect than has been quoted for other heart failure therapies. And one can argue about a modest sample size compared to other heart failure studies like the medical ones and the lacking data from other heart failure entities like the ones with preserved ejection fraction and the mid-range ejection fraction. But this was a uniform finding and effect size, which even persisted after an additional sensitivity analysis that had been performed by ruling out one study technique. And on soft clinger endpoints, we heard that already, improved symptoms, higher quality of life, greater improvement of LVEF by approximately 7% absolute, and more effective sustained freedom from AF recovery. And if we check on safety issues in that fragile patient population, this pooled analysis revealed similar rates of overall adverse events between the two groups. There was no procedure-related death, and the complication rates for tamponade, PV stenosis, and groin complications were low as well. And so we can assume an acceptable safety profile for heart failure patients undergoing AF ablation, similar to what we know from non-heart failure patients. But what about these results of these RCTs and these meta-analyses against observation in a real-world setting? And there is some data coming from France, and I would like to highlight this, and it has been presented at the ESC in August last year by Professor Fourier. And they tested all-cause death and hospitalizations at a nationwide level in unselected patients and probably EP-centered that were less experienced than the ones they performed the investigations in the big trials. And data were taken from a huge national database, discharge database, containing data of nearly 89% of the French population, so millions of people. And they performed a propensity score matching to compare the outcomes with patients, heart failure patients, who did not receive AF ablation. And they could find 250,000 of patients with heart failure and atrial fibrillation in their population, but only 0.5% of them were treated by ablation. However, lower incidence of all-cause death and rehospitalization rates were found again. And this is consistent even after multivariable analysis they undertook and propensity score matching. And this is also what we knew from the trials and the meta-analysis, only in lower number of patients and unselected patients so far. So in 2020, there's probably enough evidence to say that benefit of AF ablation in heart failure patient overweighs the risk. However, and we knew this, it is not enough to provide us with more than a class 2A or class 2B indication in our current guidelines. And we have to ask ourselves, why is this? Because I think reality is different. Not all studies are positive. And the latest one has been the AMICA trial that showed no difference in the primary endpoint and the secondary endpoint of LVEF improvement and mortality. And this makes some kind of sense to me, because heart failure patients with atrial fibrillation, there is a mixed patient population, and they show clinical variable response after AF ablation. And this, of course, must lead to different study results. So we think that the discrepancies in the underlying pathology have to be suspected. And from a clinical perspective, there are three relevant scenarios I'd like to describe. I think there's AF leading to heart failure. There's heart failure progression leading to secondary AF. And three, I think there's pre-existing structural heart disease causing AF, which initiates heart failure. And separating these in a clinical setting is not easy. And I also have to admit we are not very good in that so far. So it also is unclear what is the amount of these three subgroup of patients in our trials that have been undertaken. And however, it is really and highly relevant to distinguish between, because it has a prognostic benefit or effect on the patient, and it may guide our further heart failure management, especially decisions on device implantation if the patient doesn't have a device prior to ablation. And in the past, LVEF improvement after successful rhythm control has led to the considerations that there must be a kind of an interplay between heart failure and AF. And presence of left ventricular fibrosis and left atrial fibrosis have been considered substrate for this potentially linking interplay. So although data on LV fibrosis exist that have been shown yesterday, and there are also some contradictory in this, it is unclear what is the part of LA fibrosis or the LA substrate on ventricular function and prognosis in these patients. And from daily practice, over the last years, we got the impression that patients without LA substrates, and we perform this on a regular basis in our patients before they undergo ablation, we saw patients without fibrosis coming out better, doing better, experienced better LVEF improvement. And we hypothesized that LA fibrosis maybe could be a strong surrogate parameter that helped to stratify heart failure patients towards benefit after ablation. And if you want to check on that, you set up a trial, and we named it the Fibrosis AFH study. It was a single-center trial, roughly 100 patients, and I'd like you to keep this in mind, 80% were patients having persistent AF forms. And the evaluation was based on sinus rhythm voltage mapping, as Professor Michalski yesterday said, you have to put the catheter in it to know it. And if patients were substrate negative, we performed PVI only. In substrate positive patients, we added substrate modification. And the primary endpoint was LVF improvement. And a super response was additionally defined by an improvement of more than absolute 10% of LVEF improvement. The secondary endpoint was rhythm outcome, AF burden, based on device monitoring via telemedicine. And the only demographic difference were age and incidence of diabetes we could find between patients having LA fibrosis and having non-LA fibrosis, with substrate-positive patients being older and more diabetic. And what we found surprised us, because in patients with heart failure and predominantly persistent forms of AF, 80%, one would expect severe structural disarrangement and extensive LA fibrosis, isn't it? But our data could not confirm that assumption. Only 38% of our patients with heart failure and AF had LA fibrosis or LA substrate and needed an ablation beyond PVI only. And the majority of patients showed a healthy atrial myocardium, indicating an only limited atrial disease. And the majority, and in the substrate negative patients, we saw a greater LVEF improvement compared to those with substrate by 5%. And even echocardiographic super response was experienced in 86%. So significantly more in the substrate negative patients. And overall, the data showed that LA substrates were the only independent predictor for LVEF improvement. And there was a 7 times higher likelihood of a positive response if LA fibrosis was absent. And even more data, we observed that differences were not attributable to differences in rhythm outcome. So durable sinus rhythm was achieved in a high number of patients in both treatments arms. And this can be interpreted as an effect to the individualized ablation strategy. And we even more made the observation that the extent of LA surface fibrosis is inversely correlated to LVS response. And no treatment effect has been found in those patients who had more than 35 to 40% of LA surface fibrosis. And for us, this raises the question whether rhythm control in these patients is a valuable treatment strategy. And in contrary, in fibrosis negative patients, where you can expect echocardiographic super response, it raises the question when, if, and how other heart failure therapies, especially devices, are still indicated or not. And this observation may help a little bit to explain the conflicting data on outcome in our previous trials. Before coming to the end, I would like to share our workflow. How we work up patients if they come in with heart failure and atrial fibrillation. And at first, we very seriously try to establish sinus rhythm for at least a couple of weeks. And we do this using cardioversion. And if failed, we add amiodarone. And if failed, after 3 days, we send the patients home and bring them back to the hospital for cardioversion after full saturation 14 days. We do a closed ribbon monitoring, and ideally we do this by telemedicine, but you could also do this with regular appointments, checking the ECG, or maybe your patients have an Apple Watch or they are familiar with the Alive Core. And then there are two clinical scenarios. Either non-response, with no improvement of LVEF and symptoms, then we very strictly and forward going to other heart failure therapies, such as devices, put a CardioMEM for more monitoring in, or even LVAD or transplant are needed in the younger ones. And if there is clinical improvement and we see some LVEF response, we go for ablation, but we always go together with an intensified LA substrate evaluation. In substrate negative, we do PVI only. In the positive ones, below 35%, we add substrate modification. And we also give ablation a try if there is fibrosis over 35%. But afterwards, we are handling things a bit different. So whereas we're rather restrictive in the latter ones and with further rhythm control, in case there is a recurrence, and early considering other heart failure therapies, and this is, in our opinion, due to because we can not really achieve an LVEF response in them, we fight for sinus rhythm in the other two patient groups, because we can expect LVEF improvement. And they are on closed rhythm monitoring, and they're also on closed echocardiographic monitoring. And probably at the end, if you've been doing this straightforward and with all the powers you have to put in it, you probably end up with patients that do not need a device. If you have these in-between patients, you may have, or we consider data from MRI, maybe from genetics if appropriate, to make an individualized device decision. And at the end, you may be ending up with an implantable monitoring on telemedicine and checking if an ICD is really needed or not. To sum up, I think we already have enough data to understand that AF ablation in heart failure patients is a big deal. And it provides a substantial mortality benefit, it reduces heart failure-related hospitalization, and it comes with an acceptable procedure-related risk profile. And we have data from RCTs, we have data from meta-analysis, and we have real-world data. The only thing we're missing is translation into our guidelines. Second, evaluation of LA substrate may be used as a surrogate parameter for post-ablation LVEF improvement, and this may have impact on our further prognostic stratification in these patients, on further heart failure management. And ideally, for me, I would like to have a non-invasive approach by MRI or echo, for instance. And at least fight for sinus rhythm, especially in those patients with structural heart disease that have no LA fibrosis, because you can expect, or it is very high likely, that they recover with their LVEF. And a simple PVI, and if you want, you can also do it with cryo, can cure the arrhythmia. And there are probably no heart failure patients after the procedure, which had a huge impact on their further management in cases of device therapy. With these words in time, I'm at the end of my presentation, and I have to say thank you for your attention, and thank you to our wonderful team in Dresden.
Thank you very much for your talk. Are there questions or comments from the floor? Otherwise, I would like to start. It's heart failure patients are so important. We all agree on that, and we have positive results. Still, it's, and we discussed that yesterday already, it's difficult to say where it comes from, no, because atrial fibrillation certainly may lead to heart failure, and then we have an enormous result and improvement in heart failure if we come back to sinus rhythm. But sometimes it's also that the heart failure is an independent disease and atrial fibrillation is just coexisting, or perhaps, of course, heart failure may also be a modulating factor that allows atrial fibrillation to occur. So these two things still are very difficult to differentiate. There's a question from the floor.
Thanks for a great talk. How much fibrosis did you allow for when you said when you make a decision that there's no fibrosis? In other words, if there's 1 or 2% fibrosis, was that classified as no fibrosis or indeed fibrosis? And second of all, what substrate modification strategies do you use? Do you do box isolation, or are you doing a box isolation of fibrotic areas? Are you doing left atrial appendage isolation? Can you maybe give us some clarity on that?
Okay. Thank you very much for the question. So at the end, probably it doesn't make a huge contribution whether it's 1 or 2% of fibrosis. And maybe I can go back to the slide, to this one. As you see, the likelihood of an LVEF response was higher in the non-fibrotic ones, but you can see maybe this point over here, which comes from the 5%. I think it really starts at that point to make a contribution to LVEF recovery. So probably we not have to think percent by percent. And to the second question, we do an individualized concept. So if you need a line, we do a line. If we need a box, we do a box. If we need scar or fibrosis homogenization, we do this. So it's really individual. But if you want to read about that in more detail, there are papers from Sascha Rolfes and so on from the times when we started this in Leipzig. They have more comprehensive elaboration on that. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for the wonderful presentation. You also mentioned the AMICA trial, which is in contrast to the CASLF trial, a negative study, the AMICA trial from Karl-Heinz Cook, which was presented at the Mannheim meeting. And it was a negative trial. It was also patient including with highly bad ejection fraction. But in contrast to the CASLF trial, it was negative. And the reason why it was negative, we intensively discussed the data, is because the mean ejection fraction was like 25%. Mm-hmm. And it's these very diseased patients who obviously do not benefit from catheter ablation because it's too late. It's like end-stage disease. So the bottom line is that we probably need to ablate them early. What is your concept in Dresden? Do you still touch those patients with an ejection fraction of 20%? Or would you say they are too sick for ablation?
You don't know whether it's structural heart disease starting by 40% ejection fraction and adding the effect of atrial fibrillation coming out with 20%. And you don't also know whether the NUHA 3 maybe was a NUHA 1 or 2 becoming a NUHA 3 because of ERA 3. So it's very difficult to say this, as I agreed with you about the AMICA trial. The author said that maybe it depends on baseline heart failure, but what is baseline heart failure? I think we are not very good in distinguishing so far. How was baseline heart failure before AF came or not? And we see this in our daily practice, that even those who may be very bad turn out good, and it is really needed in the patients to have a stratifier. Because if this patient experienced and has no fibrosis in the atrium and it's not involved in the disease, then maybe this makes a huge benefit to them.
Last short question, short answer, please.
Thank you for this wonderful talk. I just have one short question. Maybe I missed it during your talk. How many patients in your study collective had a ischemic cardiomyopathy? And how many patients do you think have had kind of tachycardia-related cardiomyopathy?
Mm-hmm. So this was one of the main things we do not want it to, although it's presented on, oh, you cannot see it, I'm sorry, it has been presented on the demographics, so ICM, ischemic cardiomyopathy, were 15%, but actually we do not want it to select by this, because we wanted to have a mixed patient cohort to really can just measure the effect of the atrial disease contributing to the effect. And yes, of course, there are trials where we expect that the ischemic ones do worse than the non-ischemic ones. They exist, yes. Agree with that.
Thank you very much again.